The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So today, as often happens, I asked somebody, what shall I talk about today? And they said, the dragon. I thought, okay. And I realized we have dragons in all places. There's dragons on this, there's dragons on this, there's dragons on the altar cloth. There's dragons all over the place when you look for them. Because they're a very traditional Buddhist beast, creature, shouldn't say beast, want to treat them with great respect. There's lots of references to dragons in Buddhism. In Great Master Dogen Shobogenzo, which we were just talking about, it's full of dragons. He's always talking about dragons. In all kinds of contexts, there's dragons as kind of supernatural beings, dragons who defend the Dharma, the king of the dragons. There's all sorts of stories about all sorts of references to dragons, dragon elephants. And he always speaks of them very respectfully. There's also, there's lovely stories, one story about a Chinese sculptor who loved to sculpt dragons. And he did all his dragons, just loved them. And they were such beautiful dragons, and they were so convincing that they could bring clouds and rain, as dragons are said to do. Even these pretend dragons could bring clouds and rain. Who would love some clouds and rain? But then one day, a real dragon shows up, scares him stiff. And I think this is like an analogy for training. We kind of do our training and suddenly the real thing shows up. I mean, suddenly it realizes a whole lot bigger than we thought and much more breathing in our face, you know. Sometimes they're, as I said, beings of a kind we don't see. There's dragons and Kinaras and Maharagas and Gandharvas and all these celestial beings that some people may see. I don't see them, but I wouldn't say they're not there just because I don't see them. All kinds of beings that we don't see. And as I said, dragons are associated with wind and rain, clouds and rain. And there's a ceremony you can do to, if there's drought, to ask the dragon kings for rain. River dragons, dragons that live beneath the sea, often associated with water. Apparently, I just found out today, that the Sanskrit term naga means serpent, often a sea serpent or a river serpent. And this was translated in China as dragon. Because they didn't know about water serpents, but they knew about dragons. So the naga became dragon. So, and of course, Chinese history is full of dragons before Buddhism came. So wherever they are, or whatever they look like, there they are, and they can help us, actually. There are stories of fierce dragons living in wild, remote places, just on their own, and sort of nagas, just want to be left alone and not bother with anybody, you know. I think some of us know a few nagas. And then the stories of these dragons encountering a monk or encountering the Dharma, and being converted. And while retaining their fierce nature, they become protectors of the Dharma, guardians of the Dharma. And that is why nowadays we see them, dragons, in their positive aspect as guardians of the Dharma, which is why we have them all over all these things, because they protect. When we do a funeral, we have these two dragon plates that we have on either side of the coffin, or the ashes, if the person has been cremated, to protect them as they go on their journey. Really lovely. And they're looking outwards, because they're looking for trouble. They're not looking inwards at the person. They're guarding, looking outwards. You know, very nice. So, dragons are our friend. There's a legend about Nagarjuna, whose name means dragon something, because it starts with Naga, you know, that he found the scriptures of the old ancient Buddhas beneath the sea, guarded by the king of the dragons. And you think, okay, what does this mean exactly? You know, they weren't kept in some kind of waterproof box, probably. I think what, thinking about this morning, I think what it means is that he meditated deeply, went deeply beneath the waves of thought to the depths, and those scriptures that he gave voice to, or the wisdom scriptures, were not something he just kind of cooked up. They were the truth that he realized, truth of the ancient Buddhas, truth that has always been there, and it's always there deep within all of us, actually. And he gave voice to them. They came through him, but they're not something that just came from him. They came through him because wisdom comes through us. It's not our wisdom. It comes through us, comes through beings. And the king of the dragons, who is guarding the scriptures, is that which keeps the Dharma true and pure within us, that we keep too. And I'll come back to that. There's a Chinese saying about the Dragon Gate, which apparently, the story is that the Dragon Gate was a gorge in the Yangtze River, a very narrow, steep gorge. And it was said, as a legend in China, that fish that could leap up that gorge became dragons because it was really hard. And in Buddhism, this is taken to be the gate of the Dharma. You come in as a fish, an ordinary little being, and you train, you go through that narrow gate and become a dragon with strength and purity of training. It's really nice. Great strength and wisdom as the dragon. But you don't want to be kind of fierce dragons, and here I am, I'm strong and wise. You know, it just naturally comes through us, that wisdom and strength. Sometimes a little roar comes out. The Dragon Gate is difficult to get through. Training can be really hard. Life can be really hard. And yet, going through that gate can really help us. Going through that Dragon Gate. Because the dragon often refers to, as I said, a very fierce being, or very fierce circumstances in our lives, something we have to face. It's really hard. About a year ago, we saw a movie called Beasts of the Southern Wild. I don't know if any of you have seen it, but it's really good. And it's about this little girl in Louisiana, I guess, right about the time of the storm Katrina, and she's living with her dad on this little island, way out in the bayous. And Katrina, the storm is coming. Her mother has left them, so it's just her and her dad. And her dad is sick. He has TB, clearly. And she keeps seeing him getting sicker. And she's a schoolgirl. She goes to school. She's quite smart. And her teacher talks about the aurochs, which are these prehistoric creatures, like huge bison that lived in the, I guess, in the Antarctic or somewhere. And the little girl thinks of these. You know how children have this idea. She has this thought of these aurochs buried under the ice, huge, you know, mammoth bison things. And every time something happens to her dad, he's getting sicker, you see a picture of these bison. First they kind of begin to wake up, and then they begin to move. And as he gets sicker, the bison are coming, the aurochs are coming. Because the thing that she really dreads is her father's death. She doesn't dread the Katrina storm. And they go through the storm and all things sort of things happen. And the aurochs are getting closer. And as she knows he's dying, and she's going to see him in his house, because they've all been separated after the storm, she's going to see him in his house. And she knows he's on his deathbed. And these aurochs are galloping towards her, chasing her. She's running away from them. And right at the door of the house, she turns to face them. And they stop. And she reaches out. And that's that. They're fine. They're not going to hurt her. She is facing this awful thing that she most dreaded. And goes in, her father dies. And you know that that little kid is going to survive. But it's such a remarkable illustration of how fear works. You have this thing in the back of your mind you just dread. This huge, awful thing you don't know, and it kind of pursues you, you know, the worst thing that could happen. And as she turns and faces it, and they're just there, and they stop. Just beautiful, very nice illustration of dealing with the dragon, you know. It's quite impressive. The aurochs are like dragons. The difficult things we have to face, the things we most fear, and yet you turn and you face them, and it brings them down to size. They don't devour you. You just face them. Many years ago, our friend Laura, who we were just talking about, when she did her head novice training term, the head novices give a Dharma talk in the meditation hall. It's their first talk. And her talk was on this little phrase of Dogen: within the dragon's jaws I find many jewels. And she talked about this, and meaning that within suffering, painful circumstances, difficulties, we find the Dharma, we find that which helps us. And I never forgot that talk. And here she is, moved on in to the next thing. Sure, she had plenty to face with all that. And having come through a lot, and actually her passing was really peaceful and bright. And when she was here, she had great courage, and it was apparent. So, whatever it is, death coming, serious illness, great pain, somebody we know who's dying or has died, you know, or somebody we love, you know, these things that we dread, we can face them. They are the things that help us. And we're not alone. We're not all by ourselves. We all face these things, and we can help each other, and we can help ourselves by just looking them right in the eye. When you wake up in the night with that dread of, oh my God, you know, I hear the aurochs coming. Just look at it. There they are. Just innocent creatures, you know. I think the vegetarian. sometimes the most, the hardest seeming things can really help us. You know, illness helps us with patience. Something we need to do maybe, you know, that we dread doing, that we have to face, and just do it. Just take our courage and deal with it, you know. Face the dragon. We're in the jaws of the dragon sometimes, and there are many jewels. We may be afraid, but the dragon is not our enemy. Another meaning of the dragon, the true dragon, as Dogen talks about in Rinpoche Masaji also, the true dragon, Buddha nature, the truth that is within all of us. In Dogen's Rules for Meditation, he says, you will be as the water wherein the dragon dwells, or as the mountain whereon the tiger roams. The dragon, Buddha nature, within ourselves. The tiger represents the self. So we're as the water, fluid, wherein the dragon dwells. The dragon is in charge, not this little fluid me. And then, when the self is roaming, we can be as the mountain, still and firm as the mountain. The self is roaming, but it's not moving us. It's very nice to have them both. And again, in the Rules of Meditation near the end, he says, O sincere trainees, do not doubt the true dragon. Do not doubt Buddha nature, that truth within us. Look inwards and advance directly along the road that leads to the mind. The dragon is our own true nature within us. And Ramasta Jiyu, in her commentary on the Kyoju Kaimon, she talks about the true dragon. She quotes Dogen. She says, you know, if you study true Buddhism, you will become as the water wherein the dragon dwells. And then she goes on to say, it is necessary to know the true dragon. It is necessary to ask the dragon, the lord of the house, or Buddha nature, at all times to help and to teach. The dragon helps us. It's not just a fierce thing. It helps us. Only if you give all that is required of the price that the dragon asks, will he show you the jewel, she says. You must accept the jewel from the dragon without doubting its value or querying the price. And again, she says, the true Buddha that is your teacher is indeed the lord of the house, the true dragon. We all have that, the dragon within us. It doesn't have to be fierce always, you know, but it has that aspect. That which dwells within us and guards the Dharma, the true dragon. It keeps our training pure and true, guards our practice when we listen and heed it. It's not always comfortable. Dragons aren't always easy to live with. Sometimes it tells us what we don't want to hear, you know. Or we have to do something we don't want to do, but we know it's true. Sometimes it's calling us to face something that's really difficult, as I said. And we have to just practice great courage and face whatever it is, do what we need to do. Listen to the dragon, to heed the dragon, to give all that is required of the price that the dragon asks. It doesn't always mean doing some special courageous thing. Sometimes it does. Mostly, giving all to that price that the dragon asks, mostly is just ordinary daily practice, keeping to the precepts, relinquishing our selfishness, practicing kindness, generosity, not just wanting it my way, you know, all those little thousandfold ways we train in everyday life. That is giving what the price that the dragon asks. Being willing to give up our little grudges and unkindnesses and little judgments about people and stuff. Or living with ongoing pain or depression or other difficult circumstances, just the constant, ongoing, patiently living with something really difficult, you know. That can be part of our training, depending on what we have. Sometimes it's one thing, sometimes it's another. Sometimes it's a great big thing we have to kind of go through. Sometimes it's just a little ordinary daily life, you know, with all its little ups and downs. Sometimes it's just an ongoing difficulty. But everybody has things that they find hard, that we know we need to do. And within the dragon's jaws we find many jewels. It's not just toughing it out. It really helps us. Dealing with ongoing pain helps us find patience and kindness and compassion for other beings who also have pain. We know what it's like to suffer, or when we're bereaved, or all of these things that happen. Within all of those things, they help us in our training. They help us to practice kindness and patience. They help us to keep to the precepts in the midst of difficult conditions, to have sympathy for others. If we didn't have pain, we couldn't have kindness. And within those jaws, we find many jewels. We may not recognize these jewels immediately. Sometimes we find their worth only with time. We find gradually we're growing in patience. Gradually we're getting kinder. Gradually things are lightening. Gradually we're happier. We're nicer, you know, with training. And often in the midst of difficult circumstances. It's not because training is all easy and comfortable and nice that we find ourselves doing great. Usually when things are really hard, that we really have to deepen our practice and our faith, because it's faith that's at the bottom. Faith in the practice, faith in the dragon, the true dragon that we have within us, that we can heed, that helps us. In the midst of suffering, in the midst of great fear, great change, great sadness, the jewel may be right in our hand, and it's been there all the time. And we just look, there it is, our jewel of faith, our jewel of trust in the Dharma, practice of the Dharma, our own Buddha nature, We all have it. And as we train, we gradually wash it off so it can be seen and it can help us and we know it's always there. And that's our talk about the dragon for today. Thank you.